Welcome to the Body Bag Podcast. And this week, we are off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
He really is a wizard of a wiz, if ever a wiz there was.
Yes.
There's no place like Body Bag Podcast. There's no place like Body Bag Podcast.
Yeah, Chris is here, and we are doing another double feature of the Wizard of Oz and the Human Monster. So going back to 1939.
Well, I was going to say, you couldn't have chose two vastly different movies if you tried.
No, but, you know, once you go back that far, your selection's kind of...
You're kind of limited.
Yeah, kind of limited in where you can go.
You looked back and you just saw Bela Lugosi's name and you were like, oh, Bela Lugosi, he's a...
I know him.
He's an icon. He's an icon.
Yeah, let's do that movie.
Yeah, and I'm sure Dave is nothing but happy with his pick. But yes, the main topic I would imagine we would say is The Wizard of Oz. Even though it's a horror podcast, this one's the more well-known one.
Yeah. Yeah, and usually we start off with we end with the horror movie when we do the double features.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with this one, we should probably start off with Bela Lugosi's The Human Monster.
I have no problem with that.
Save The Wizard of Oz for like the main event.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and just say right off the bat, you said, so we'll just go into Human Monster from 1939, starring Bela Lugosi.
Yeah, and if you're from the UK, it was called The Dark Eyes of London, which is the book.
Yeah, and I have no problem saying that this was to me what Abbott and Costello was to you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you know, spoilers for my thoughts on this thing, but I this was an 80-minute movie. You know how if you watch a 2-hour movie, sometimes if it's not done well, you feel that 2 hours, you have to check your watch. That was me, and this was an 80-minute movie.
Yeah, you felt it, yeah. Not too much on the entertaining side with this one.
No, Bela Lugosi was okay.
Yeah.
He's doing he was the most interesting.
Yeah.
I'd say he was the most interesting part of the movie. But Dark Eyes Over London, or other terms of The Human Monster, quick one or two sentence sum up. There's murders happening about in London, and it all connects to this man called Dr. Orloff, who owns a life insurance policy agency as well as a wayward home for the blind.
So I guess in the 30s, when people were blind and no one wanted to deal with them, they just sent them to places like this.
Which, pretty much a dilapidated, like, an orphanage for blind people. Best way I can describe it.
Yeah.
And thrown into the mix is, I don't even remember what the main... You're going to have to help me with this, because I had to keep myself on track, because, again, this movie...
It's hard to pay attention to, because it's dry.
It's very dry, and things will happen... For a movie called The Human Monster, you get very little human monster.
Yeah, I get, like, the message they were going for, like... Because Bela Lugosi's character is named Jake, and he's a defigured blind person. Kind of looks like a monster.
Yes.
But the actual monster of this movie is Dr. Orloff.
The real monster is that man.
Killing his blind patients and cashing in the insurance on them.
Fine setup.
Yeah.
A perfectly fine setup, and... You know, when I first saw this, I was thinking, all right, he's Dr. Orloff. Is he like doing some kind of evil experiments? And is this like a cabinet of Dr. Caligari thing where he's like making people and turning them into monsters or something? I was like, I can get on board with that.
Right? But he's really not. There's just like that one guy he's kind of experimenting on and he kills, but...
Tell me, in what world does this make sense? Because Dr. Orloff, he has this house for the blind, and
man
he
comes
takes
in to like... I think he's coming to, like, donate to the House of the Blind. And Dr. Orloff just kills him.
Well, he got a loan from Dr. Orloff because he takes out life insurance policies and he loans out money to people.
Okay.
And he told this guy, hey, why don't you come on down to the Wayward Home for the Blind thing? There's this guy there who runs it. His name is, what is his name? It started with a D. Hold on. I have to,
Dearborn.
One of those instances where Dearborn.
Yeah,
there's a guy named Dearborn down there.
Yeah.
And he operates this house for the blind thing, which, spoiler, it's actually Bela Lugosi in disguise.
Yeah.
But come on down and check it out. And yes, I agree with you. And then he kills the guy. He brings the guy over and says, and here is where this stuff happens, and this is where we have food every night, and blah 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 blah.
And then he breaks into the room with Jake, and at first I thought, oh, Jake's supposed to be hidden, he's a monster, and that's why he killed him, but no, everyone kind of knows Jake.
Yeah, Jake's just around.
Yeah, he's just a figure, he's not actually a monster, yeah. So I was like, I spent like the last 20 minutes of the movie like, why did they kill the guy at the beginning?
Yeah, because he loaned him money.
Yeah.
He loaned him money, and then invited the guy, and then kills him.
Yeah, kills a well-known guy.
A well-known guy.
That's going to bring heat on the place, which it does, because the guy's daughter's like, well, I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
Working with the cops, she starts working at this place and finding information.
Along with a inspector from Chicago comes in on the scene as well to kind of aid it. This is like the 13th or 14th body that has been disposed of and found in the River Thames. And they're like, all right, where are all these bodies coming up? Wait a second. One thing is uniting all these things. They all have the same insurance policy from this guy named Orloff.
Yeah.
Who is now considered their sole beneficiary.
No, the school itself is the sole beneficiary.
Well, yeah. The school, the money is going to, is eventually going to him.
Laundering money through the school, yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, that's fine as a setup. But man, you know what?
The event that kicked off the movie, and he said, it's like, why does he kill this guy? He kept killing these wayward blind people. He would have got away with it way, way longer.
Yeah, like, because they're wayward, like, blind people who are, like, homeless, don't have anybody taking care of them. Yes, that makes sense. You know, that makes sense as a serial killer. Although, I don't know how that makes a lot of sense serial killer-wise. I don't know how much money you stand to make from homeless blind people.
I don't know, but, you know.
But I think it was less that the homeless blind people he was taking the beneficiaries out on. I think is that he was kind of using them as the front. They were kind of like workers in his place without realizing what they were doing.
Basically, yeah.
But I know that he would kill people who had no real familial attachments, use his business as a way to dispose the body, and just as a front.
Yeah.
But you know who is his right-hand man? Jake. And if you're going to have a right-hand man who's also your muscle, why would you pick a disfigured man who can be easily identified and, oh yeah, he's blind?
Yeah.
Let me have that guy be my muscle and go, because he uses him as an assassin.
Basically,
When the heat starts coming down and he's like, all right, we got to get rid of witnesses. So-and-so is asking too many questions. The police are starting to find leads to someone. I need you to kill this person who knew this girl's father. Yeah. They might lead to me. I'm going to send the blind, disfigured man to go kill him.
Right. I guess, I mean... Your guy gets caught, just blame it on him. Like, he was the one doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you going to believe?
Yeah.
And your doctor or this disfigured, ugly man?
Yeah, this disfigured, ugly... We're not going to believe him. He's ugly. It was the 30s. Yeah. Not going to believe him. He's ugly. The entire time... Because you see Jake every once in a while. This movie is mostly a police procedural. A police procedural.
Basically, yeah. Very, very limited on, like, the horror aspects, but I guess for 1939, that was horror.
It just shouldn't have been called Human Monster, because you think that it's going to be this creature feature.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not. It's really just it's a crime horror, heavy on the crime.
Yeah, I mean, like, the UK title makes sense. The
Dark Eyes Over London. That makes sense, because there is a line in this movie where one of the blind people... The dead man's daughter gets a job working at the Wayward Home for the Blind, and one of the blind people says, "Does she have dark eyes like us?" Hence the title. But yes, unfortunately, but what did you think of Bela Lugosi? Like, I mean, the setup they gave him is ridiculous. But I mean, what did you think of him? This is probably the first Bela Lugosi movie that I actually sat and watched. In all honesty,
same here.
I know of him, and I know he's famous for being Dracula.
Yeah.
But I never sat down and actually watched a Bela Lugosi movie.
Yeah. Like, I thought Bela Lugosi was Jake.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, like, his thing. He's disfigured until I looked on Wikipedia for the cast and realized he was Orloff. Yeah.
I was wondering where he was at first. And then when I heard Orloff talking, I was like, oh, that's Bela Lugosi. I know that voice. Because I've heard his voice referenced a bunch of times. So when I heard and talk like this, I was like, oh, that's fucking... That's creatures of the night. I was like, oh, that's that dude.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I'm not used to seeing him all spruced up and wearing a suit.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty good.
He was the most interesting part. Like, yeah. When you can tell why he's cast a lot back in the 30s. Yeah. He just kind of had this, like, presence about him where, like, okay, I'm kind of interested in what you're saying.
Yeah, like the pre-Vincent Price guy.
Yeah. So I would say that he was definitely not what was wrong with the movie.
No. The script was what was wrong with the movie, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. He was good.
Yeah, he was fine. You know, but I'd say that this movie was...
Everyone kind of overacts in the movie, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They even brought in the American to try to add a little comedy, which didn't fit for this kind of movie.
No, it all the comedy of him kind of fell flat.
They bring in... now, why did they bring this guy in from Chicago? Is it because the daughter was from Chicago?
No. I was just like, okay, I guess, you know.
Like, we're bringing in this guy from Chicago to help with the case. Yeah, but why, though?
He caught a lot of serial killers in the USA.
But he does nothing but crack jokes in this movie, and none of them land.
He's just, I guess he was supposed to be a character to relate to American audiences. I don't know.
First thing he does when he comes off the train, when he meets the inspector from Scotland Yard over here, he's like, ha ha ha, and puts a handcuff on him. And he's like, hey, I'm a jokester.
Yeah. And, I'm just like, okay.
All right, so you're just not going to be professional at all then.
Yeah, like, yeah. Bringing a guy from America doesn't make any sense, because back then, dude had to take a boat, which takes a couple weeks, just to get to the UK.
And then he just comes over here, hits on like one of the women police officers, fires his gun a lot of times. There was some instances where he was just like firing his gun when one of the suspects was going away. He's like, I missed him. And I was like, all right, dude, you don't need to be here. Like,
get 5 minutes alone with him and I'll get him singing.
It's like, it's funny because I think America has about the same amount of reputation like that as it did back then.
Yeah.
Is this gun happy, doesn't take anything serious, I'm going to, you know, talk with my fists kind of attitude.
Yeah. That character was kind of pointless. I was just like, all right, sure.
Spoiler alert, by the way, they find out through a series of investigations. Again, it was hard for me to pay attention what linked to what, because it's not just a crime thing, but it is a very procedural, very like, we're going to go look at these photographs. Now I'm going to go talk to the forensic people. Yeah. Now I'm going to make phone calls. And it's like, dude, I watch
crime. The daughter who's working at the blind house finds one of her dad's cufflinks. So then Orloff reveals himself as being Dearborn and Orloff, and he's like, I gotta kill you now.
He's been pretending to be a blind, I don't know, just the guy who heads the operation at the Wayward Home for the Blind. He's pretending to be a blind man himself. He has like a goofy wig on, and he has glasses and a mustache, and he, at the end, it's the big reveal, the big Scooby-Doo take off the mask thing. It's actually me, Count Orloff.
Yeah, because
Dr. Orloff.
She goes up to Dearborn with cufflinks. She's like, this is my father's cuffling. And he goes, I've never seen that before. And she's like, same, you're blind. Hey,
oh, shit.
And then he's like, oh, actually, I'm not.
Oh well.
And then he's like, I'm going to kill you. Jake, please come kill this woman. And then Jake starts to kill her. And then he realizes that Orloff killed one of his homies. So he's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that now. And then Jake kills Orloff. As Orloff shoots Jake and they both die. End of the movie.
End of the movie. A way more interesting movie would have been Orloff finding this disfigured man and then getting him to start killing people.
Yeah.
That would have been a way more interesting movie.
Yeah.
So that's the movie. We did kind of speed through it, but again, I can't bring my... We're going to rate it, but I can't bring myself in good conscience to actually recommend it.
No. maybe it was good back then. And it just ages poorly. It's dull. It's a dull movie.
It's a dull movie for a movie called The Human Monster.
Yeah. The dialogue's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, it wasn't until most of the movie was done before I realized, is Jake supposed to be the human monster?
Yeah.
Like, I knew that he was just this disfigured blind guy. But I honestly thought, because when I first saw him, when we first see this establishment.
The scene you see him at first in is like kind of when the guy goes into the room and he gets killed, that kicks everything off. You see him like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, this human monster's just killing people in this blind house.
But I, like I said, I thought it was that he was turning people into monsters. like we see Jacob's like, oh, okay, so this is like a house of monsters. He's taking people who are humans and then like doing experiments on them, probably lobotomizing them and turning them into mindless monsters or something.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's just this dude.
Yeah.
And like you said, good point. Nobody really acts like he's a monster. He's just kind of around.
Yeah, he's just a defeat guy, and people are just like, yeah, Jake's cool.
Yeah, nobody actually like points like, oh my god, what a hideous man, except for when he goes to try to kill somebody, but
like
he walks around and people are just like, oh yeah, that's Jake.
Yeah, that's Jake. He's blind, goofy looking, whatever.
He's goofy looking, whatever, but he works here. They're sitting there treating him like Quasimodo. Like, yeah. He gets better treatment than Quasimodo.
Yeah.
And, like, there was instances where he was actually out about on a town street.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody's like screaming or clutching their purse. They're just like, oh, look at that guy. Poor dude.
Yeah, because like the setup of the movie, you're like, okay, this monster's in a blind house. That makes sense because none of the guys there could see what he looks like and knows he's a monster, but no.
Yeah, it makes sense.
No, they don't go in that direction. They go, oh, Jake's just a regular, weird looking dude.
He might as well have just not even been disfigured looking because he just acted like an assassin anyway.
Yeah.
Like he might as well have just been a regular. Just a dude. You didn't even need to put all that makeup on. Like,
yeah, he looked on the outside of what Orloff is on the inside.
Yeah, it's that. It's like, yeah, we get it.
All right, time to rate this
movie. Oh boy, you know, even having said all that, I was still kind in my breakdown.
Yeah.
What'd you put for technicals?
Technical?
It wasn't awful.
It wasn't awful. It wasn't great, but it's also from the 40s, which don't know what. The effects are what good effects from them look like, but I know Wizard of Oz that came out in the same movie looks a lot better.
That's the only thing I had to compare it to.
Yeah, so I just went 5.
I did exactly 5 as well.
Yeah,
because I was like, it was not bad. It wasn't outstanding. Wizard of Oz is a technical marvel.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just looked fine. That's all I could say was that it was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Story, I gave it a 3.8.
You gave it I gave it a 4.4 just because I could follow it, but it was just not keeping me engaged. I just didn't care.
Follow it easily, but you just don't care about anybody in this movie, and you don't really care about the story. Like, this movie could have ended at the halfway point with no conclusion. I would have probably felt the same exact way about the story. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for saving me the 30 minutes. Cool.
I mean, we did not need to see, like, the inspectors from Scotland Yard making, like, various phone calls to various establishments, having, like, full-on conversations over the phone.
Yeah.
We didn't need to see, like, now let's go down and see if the people who take the pictures have anything to say. Do you? Kinda, but nothing that you haven't already seen.
Yeah.
So, the fact that I could
follow this American character who's just there.
He's just there, cracking jokes.
Him, but he's not really helping anything, yeah. Doesn't move the story along at all.
So, yeah, I just said 4.4.
Enjoyment?
I gave it 3.5. When a Lugosi wasn't on screen, I was bored out of my mind.
Yeah, I went 3.2. It's the thing I hate most movies, it being boring.
When I was watching it, I was like, Dave has to be, like, kicking himself for choosing this right now.
Yeah. Like, I could handle a bad movie with a terrible story as long as things are happening. Things were not happening in this movie at all.
This is about on par with Soul Survivor for me.
Yeah.
In terms of like nothing happening.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have a sum total for us?
My sum total is 12 out of 30. Yours is 12.9 out of 30. So a total of 12.45 out of 30.
And I still think that
that's generous.
I think that's more generous than what it got on the old tomato meter. In all honesty, I think it got
38%.
Oh, I thought it was like 20-something, but yeah, we're actually kind of right there then.
Yeah, I think it's just we don't know what to give in technicals, so we both just kind of gave it a 5. It's above movies like Hanukkah and Soul Survivor and Black Christmas, but it's right there with them.
Though, I could probably enjoy Black Christmas more on the sole fact that I can roast it.
Yeah.
I can roast that movie.
Enjoy Black Christmas at all. It's just so irritating.
Well, I would never watch it by myself. I would have to watch it with somebody. One of these days, we have to do like a live viewing, MST3K style.
Yeah.
And yes, I would never watch it by myself. But if I'm with somebody, I can have a fun time tearing it to pieces. But at least you made up for it by giving us a very good movie.
Yeah, like a movie that's like kind of, well, it is like significant in cinema.
Oh, yes. It's one of probably one of the most significant movies. Like when you talk about classics and I think we mentioned this last time, like your Citizen Kanes and Casablancas and stuff. This is up there.
Yeah. And I mean, it still gets referenced to this day and people still take plots from this. So, and this movie came out, what?
39, because it's same year.
No, I mean, what was it?
Are you trying to give an exact?
86 years ago?
I sometimes have to remind myself that it was that long ago.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I would, like, in my mind, I feel like this movie came out when I was a child,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't. It came out way before then.
In my mind, the movie came out, like, in the 60s. For some reason, whenever I think about it, I'm like, that movie probably came out in the 60s, because they were still doing black and white movies in the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've only watched Wizard of Oz in color.
Oh, no, I've only seen it in color, too, but I just, for some reason, I equate it with, like, the black and white movie era, and I'm like, oh, surely it couldn't have been earlier than the 50s.
Yeah.
But yes, we, you know, there were color movies. It was just cheaper to keep in black and white back in the
day.
Yeah. I figured that since I would imagine that most people probably know Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
So I figured that maybe we could also talk about a couple of the spinoff movies like Oz Great and Powerful and the recent Wicked movie that came out. Just in terms of like nothing, we don't have to like go into it, but just did you watch either of those?
I have not seen either one of those yet.
Okay, because I've seen Oz the Great and Powerful with James Franco, directed by Sam Raimi, I believe, and it's very much what you it's a prequel to how, you know, the Wizard of Oz, how the wizard came into the land of Oz.
Yeah,
and it's exactly what you would think for a movie that didn't need to exist.
Yeah.
But it's directed by Sam Raimi, so visually it was pretty fun. But certainly no Wizard of Oz.
And also, there's a lot of things that are kind of like, you could tell Wizard of Oz had a great effect on this. Like, there's basically a Wizard of Oz episode in Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And a show that we both like, The Magicians.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like kind of a, like a combination of Harry Potter and Wizard of Oz.
And I'll even say, back in the day, I used to be really into the show Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
I'd say the first couple of seasons, then it dropped off, but they had a whole Wizard of Oz thing that was okay, but it's still a very popular IP that gets referenced and parodied and homaged to. I guess if you've been living under a rock, do you have a quick sum up? Because, you know, it's one of those where it would be a shame to spoil it, but at the same time, it's 80 plus years old.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure almost every person in the world has seen this movie.
Yeah.
You're just doing a crime to yourself. You should probably watch it.
I can excuse people who don't see, like we said, 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
From the one of our first.
If you haven't seen Casablanca, that's fine. I get it.
But Wizard of Oz? Wizard of Oz is just one of those things that, like, you just kind of put on, even little kid, when you're a little kid, you even put that on. Like,
put it on for kids because it's colorful, it's fun.
It's harmless. It has a little bit of an edge sometimes that people say that the flying monkeys can be scary.
Yeah. It's just a fun movie. But basically, this movie follows Dorothy, who is a farm girl living in Kansas with her aunt and uncle. And
her little dog, Toto.
Her little dog, Toto, who bites someone, and she's basically trying to hide her dog so her dog doesn't get put down.
Yeah.
Somebody isn't like extreme, like, oh, that's bad. No, it's like a small Pomeranian.
It's like a small Pomeranian or one of those little, like, about as small as one of those Chihuahua dogs.
Yeah. Like, so it biting anybody isn't going to hurt.
It nips.
Yeah. And then a tornado hits, and Dorothy is trapped in her house, and she's sent off to Oz, where the story kicks off, and she lands on a witch, takes the witch's shoes, and she's like, I have to get home. And they're like, well, you need to go see the wizard in the Emerald City. And she takes the voyage from where she's at to the Emerald City, where she meets some friends, Tin Man, the Lion, the Scarecrow. They get there, kind of realize the wizard is kind of not a wizard.
Sends him out to do a hit mission before he'll help them.
Yeah, and then realize he really can't help them. And then Glinda, who's a good witch, is like, oh, Dorothy, your way home has been on your feet the entire time.
Those shoes you have are magical.
Yeah.
That's why the Wicked Witch wanted him so badly.
Yeah.
So go ahead and click your heels together and say that you wish to be home, and just like that, she's back home in Kansas.
And that's a quick sum up of the movie.
Quick sum up, yeah.
And being adult is realizing Glinda is the villain in this movie.
I have that in my notes. I said, hey, we can agree that Good Witch of the East is really the villain, right? We can agree with this, right?
Yeah, Glinda is the villain in this movie. Like, what does she do? Dorothy lands in the house, kills one witch. She takes those shoes off that witch and puts them on Dorothy.
Endangers her.
Endangers her. Sends her on a voyage she didn't need to go on. She could have went home at the beginning. And to see the wizard, which Glinda wanted her to expose the wizard to be the fake, so remove him from power, have her kill the Wicked Witch to the west.
And now she can rule as a tyrant.
Now she has no political opposition, and Dorothy's gone.
I mean, that's the real version.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Hollywood, you know, tame version is that, oh, because the Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Cowardly Lion are all played by people who were also in Dorothy's farm, yeah. Like hired workers.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, she just got knocked out and it was all a dream. And that wizard was actually one of those traveling, he's like a traveling salesman slash.
Like he travels magician. A circus or something like
that. He's a snake oil salesman kind of guy.
Yeah.
I will say, all right, before I forget, do you know how, because this is a spoiler for my favorite scene. When she first lands in the land of the Munchkin Land.
Yeah.
She leaves her, the house basically gets taken up from a tornado and you have a fun little scene of all things going on and it crash lands. When she opens up the door, it goes from sepia tone to color.
Yeah.
Do you know how that was done?
No.
This is one of those, it was actually trickery. It's actually lighting. The inside of the cabin where she is, that sepia tone.
Yeah.
It was not really sepia tone. It was just lit in a way that made it look like sepia tone.
Okay.
It was just done with like brownish lighting so that when she opens up the door to the set, color. So I thought that was really, because you that think, is, how do they,
yeah,
like, how do they, yeah. How do they do that? How do they make it go? Like, how do they have the technology to go from sepia tone to immediately color? It's like, they didn't.
Yeah. I gotta say, I've always been creeped out by how the Munchkins look.
Munchkins are those Munchkins are actually creepier than the flying monkeys, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, because, you know, they're Munchkin size, so they're using, I want to say, like, toddler actors, but putting makeup on them so they look.
Some of them are legit. Small people.
Yeah, but like they'd put makeup on them so they look like, you know, toddlers and old at the same time.
It's like, yeah, why'd you do that for? Why can't you just let them look like regular people?
Right. Like, oh, God.
You made this grown man look like a toddler.
Like, you look like you could be anywhere from 3 to 37, man.
The fact that they make them dressed up like little boys, yeah. and little girls, that's something like a serial killer would do. Like, if it was I'm going to dress up like a little boy and they kill people.
God, like, oh, it's so creepy, dude.
That's a good point. Like, I wouldn't say maybe scarier than the flying monkeys, but maybe more unsettling.
Yeah.
And of course, this is also a musical, has a number of, you know, most famously, probably Over the Rainbow. Do you enjoy the music of this?
Yeah. It's not like I'm going to go out of my way to listen to it, but for, like, you know, musical numbers and musical.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are pretty good.
I find myself once in a blue moon singing the Scarecrow song. Just, I can while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. Like, if I only had a brain. I'd do that sometimes when I'm like around my condo, just like kind of cleaning up. But
yeah, the songs are, you know, they do what they're supposed to do. They're catchy, have a good tune, put you in a pretty good mood.
Put you in a pretty good mood. Although, when I think of Wizard of Oz, it isn't like my go-to musical.
No.
There's like maybe two songs that I actually enjoy. But, I mean, they do serve the purpose of it. Like, they're not like bad songs. The songs are more to be just atmospheric than anything.
Yeah. And songs that could stop and continue at any point.
Yeah. Like they get to the Emerald City and swish, swish here, swish, swish there, something, something. It's them just getting introduced to the Emerald City, but they stop and go.
Yeah,
it's more just always, atmosphere, like,
yeah, I've always loved the set of the Emerald City.
Yeah, it's
genuinely looks so nice.
I mean, on a technical scale, the set pieces are amazing in this. Certain ones definitely seem like stage sets, plays, like a stage set you would see on a play. But it's also it's a good mix of practical effects and like matte paintings for like backgrounds and a good amount of like CG. I mean, that they had the orb, Glinda gets around by a floating bubble.
Yeah. Which, I mean, nowadays doesn't look good, but for the time,
no,
it was probably really good.
Yeah. Like, what am I going to do? Like, oh my God, that looks terrible. Yeah, it was 1939.
Like, but it looks good enough where it could pass. Like, if that was in a movie in the 80s, it wouldn't seem out of date.
No, and like you see the forest trees, like the trees are obviously people inside
the trees,
inside the trees in a costume. But I don't know, it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland, where it's just like, well, it's just this fantastical world.
Yeah,
maybe that's what the trees are like. I don't know, like it fits in the kind of
the set and the effects too is kind of. Expand on this fantastical world that she's entered. Yeah,
it's like kind of realistic but not quite.
Yeah,
like everything is kind of normal-ish but not really.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be normal-ish. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you're talking about a fucking scarecrow walking around and a lion that's clearly a dude in a outfit.
Yeah,
in fact, I think the Tin Man probably is a most realistic looking, like, you know, tin looking thing.
Which is just a dude in like a tin barrel painted silver.
I mean, I'm sure it's probably like, yeah, it's like some cheap metal. It could be cardboard for all I know.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I'm pretty sure like the paint they used to paint them silver had asbestos in it.
Yeah, there's some horror stories behind this movie.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I'd say that if there was going to be any horror element to this, it would probably be what happened off screen.
Yeah.
Or during the production. Like, I think probably the most well-known one is what happened to the Wicked Witch during the famous scene where she's, like, bursts into a cloud of smoke and then disappears.
Yeah, the trapdoor caused her to fall into the flame.
Yeah, and got, like, severe burns.
Yeah.
Put her out of commission for a little bit. They couldn't do the movie until she got better.
Yeah, and what they put Judy Garland through,
mm-hmm.
help her stay young. Basically forcing her cigarettes and coffee and making her only eat soup.
Do you know how old she was when she made this movie?
I want to say 14 or 15.
But, I mean, I don't remember when it came out, but there was, like, stories that came out about Judy Garland and how, like, it led her down a pretty dark path.
Yeah, this movie and, like, her whole contract with MGM.
Yeah. I mean, this was part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying this was the sole movie that made her have a horror, but it added to it.
Yeah, this, like, the behind the scenes makes this less happy.
Which is a shame to hear, but yeah. I mean, but we can, like, still watch the movie for what it is as
an all-time classic movie that these people literally put their blood, sweat, and tears into making, and it's something that has stood the test of time.
Now, usually, let's talk about the villain for a minute.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Wicked Witch.
She wasn't that bad.
No, usually whenever...
her shoes.
When Hollywood does, like, a top, like, 10 or a top 50, like, movie villains of all time, she usually ends up in the top 10.
Yeah.
She's usually listed more of a... probably just out of respect more than anything.
Yeah.
But she is kind of reasonable.
Yeah. Like,
you killed my sister.
You dropped your house on my sister, and then you stole her shoes. Can I just
give me my shoe? Give me her
back?
Shoes.
Yeah, like what she's asking for is reasonable. I mean, the length she's willing to go to for those shoes is kind of like
messed up.
Yeah,
but they would be her shoes more by right, I would think.
I mean, I don't really know the law of the land of Oz when it comes to that inheritance, but.
It's like whoever kills somebody in the land of Oz gets to have their property.
Yeah, usually, yeah, shoes would go down to the sister, but, you know, this one weird arbitrary law saying if you drop your house on someone, you get to keep their belongings when you kill them.
That might be how it goes, because, I mean, when they killed the Wicked Witch, they just, it's like, yeah, you can have her broom.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, yeah, well, hey, you guys killed her fair and square. So, I mean, that was our boss. I mean,
on accident, too. You just threw water on her and she melted.
But you are a murderer, Dorothy.
Yeah. You did get two bodies in your time enough, so... Yeah.
That is certainly one way to look at this movie, is like a girl comes down and starts murdering the village folk of this land of Oz.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure there's a horror... You know how they keep making, like, horror movies out of, like...
Yeah, if they make one for Oz, that's what it's gonna be. Dorothy's just gonna come out. Instead of being this sweet, naive girl, it's just gonna be a hardened serial killer.
The ruby slippers are red because of it's, like, covered in blood.
Yeah.
But even in turn, like, I don't, these shoes are kind of a MacGuffin, just because she wants these shoes and she's willing to kill for these shoes. And Glinda kind of is like, yeah, she wants the, well, Glinda, she's like, oh no, you can't have these shoes. Other than sentimental value, like, what are these shoes? Like, I guess they are magical in some aspect. They send Dorothy back home.
Yeah.
But you don't really know what these shoes do. Like, why do you want these shoes so bad? Yeah, they look nice.
Oh, all they could do, yeah. Maybe they could just send you anywhere.
Maybe she wanted the teleportation power.
Yeah, maybe that's the power of these shoes. You just click them 3 times and you can go anywhere you want. Dorothy just chose to go home.
Now, who's an even bigger villain? Glinda or the wizard?
Probably Glinda.
I mean, wizard's more of just a shady snake oil salesman more than anything.
Yeah. Glinda is like a political assassin, that kind of.
Well, the wizard was the one who said, go kill the Wicked Witch.
Yeah, but... Glinda always put Dorothy in the Wicked Witch's path, knowing that Dorothy would probably eventually accidentally kill her, knowing that she just needed to spill water on her.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Glinda, you know, Glinda was probably behind the scenes just, come on, just spill a little water on her.
That's Glinda is Glinda's a villain by active omission.
Yeah.
While the wizard is... I don't know. I mean, he did say, yeah, I ain't going to help. Well, he's a villain, and Glinda will actively put you in harm's way. The wizard will say, I'm not going to help you unless you put yourself in harm's way. So at least he gives you a choice.
Yeah.
Because Dorothy didn't even ask for the slippers. It's just like, poop, hey, there they are. It's like, wait, hold on a second. I didn't ask for this.
Yeah. And then, like, at the end, Glinda's like, all you have to do is tap the shoes 3 times. Like, oh, she could have went home at the beginning.
And then she made up some bullshit
like, oh, I needed you to go through this journey, taking out all my political opponents, so you believe.
You just needed to have, it just, and also, and she's a, she's just insulting, like, are you, oh no, only bad witches are ugly, like, you asshole.
Right?
That was uncalled for.
Right. Oh. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the movie Wicked kind of tidies some of that up.
Yeah, I've never seen the musical, and I'm waiting for the movie to come out on streaming to watch it.
I know. I don't know.
But I know, like, the premise is, like, Glinda's, like, kind of, like, high school mean girl.
Yeah, and there's, like, I think it has all the... It's like, this is why some of the stuff that happened in Wizard of Oz happened the way it did. And,
yeah.
I only know a few things about Wicked... I think I would rather see the stage play, only just because whenever there's a movie that comes out that was based off of a Broadway show, I'd much rather see the Broadway version first.
Yeah.
Just because I have a respect for Broadway shows that in some ways is more than my respect for movie making, just because you got to do everything one take.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
That, and I just remember hearing a lot of kerfuffle around the woman who plays the Wicked Witch.
Yeah, I didn't really get that. Like, I've listened to some of the songs from it, and she crushes, like, the singing part, so...
Oh, I haven't heard anything bad about her acting, just more of the actress who made a big deal about, like, a poster that was made, stuff like that. But that's, I mean, that has nothing to do with the movie.
About anything, so I don't really care when people do that. I'm like, okay, whatever.
But, I mean, she kind of, like, lashed out at somebody, whatever, but, you know, that's has nothing to do with the movie. But I've heard nothing but good things.
Not like she murdered anybody or anything, so I'm like, okay, I don't care.
That we know of.
Yeah, exactly, but yeah.
It is a part one, by the way, so...
Yeah, I think part two comes out this November.
I'm sure at some point I'll eventually end up seeing it one way or another.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they film part one, part two together. And then, like in the play, it has an intermission at that point. So they're like,
now, sticking with the other spinoff movies, just real quick, there are two other ones that come to mind that I wonder if you had seen, and that's The Wiz, and the other one being Return to Oz. I think The Wiz has Michael Jackson in it.
No, I and, think either one of these.
And Return to Oz, I've heard a lot of people say, is pretty scary, in all honesty.
Really?
And it doesn't have Judy Garland, I believe. I mean, it's. Yeah. I think that one's. I can't tell you when it came out. It was probably came out in like the.
Return to Oz came out in 1985.
I was going to say, it either came out in the 70s or 80s. I might have to watch that one. That was one that I've seen one or two bits and pieces of, but is that has some like legitimately like kind of scary moments.
Yeah, I can't remember the title of it, but I think I remember watching like a 6-part like limited series that was like based on The Wizard of Oz. That came out like the 2010s.
Do a little research on that, because you just saying that kind of jogged a memory. I don't know. I might know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Wizard of Oz series.
Yeah. Okay. It's called The Tin Man.
It's called The Tin Man?
Yeah.
Oh.
Came out on Sci-Fi Channel starring Zoe Deschanel.
Ooh. I might have to watch it now. I kind of have the hots for
you. Yeah.
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking of the series of... Sometimes I get this there's an Alice in Wonderland sci-fi live action like series that I think I was getting that mixed up.
Yeah, this is just a culturally significant movie.
This is just us glazing like a classic. You don't need us to tell you that this is a classic.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're going to add anything new to the
what people haven't already said about it, but
to the decades of praise.
Yeah. But it is time to give it a score.
Yeah. This might take the place of 12 Angry Men, in all honesty.
We'll see, yeah. All right, so what are you giving it on Technical?
I gotta give it a 9.5.
9.5.
I mean, especially considering the one that we watched beforehand was The Human Monster. The way that the technicals are still being talked about, like how do they do certain things for the 1930s?
Yeah. Yeah, I give it a 9. Like, it's still really good and stands up for today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, technically, for a movie made in 1939, which was probably filmed in, like, 1938, because this movie probably took a long time to film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the effects they used were...
For a movie that was all about this fantasy land.
Yeah.
I think they did the absolute best they could.
Exactly. And then story.
I nitpicked
the story a little bit today, kind of poking fun at it, but the story is still pretty good.
Yeah,
so I went 8.5.
8.5. I gave it 8.9.
8.9. It's a good story, easy to follow. The characters are compelling. They all have their own motivations and reason why they're going on this journey. So,
The story that they were telling, you can easily follow. It's family friendly. Like, it has a little bit of. The music, you know, one or two catchy numbers, but for the most part, they're hummable for what they're used for. And, all the characters were very nice.
And enjoyment, I'm also going to give an 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really enjoyable movie, especially if you're watching a movie that's this old. It's not a movie I'm going to watch all the time, but once every couple of years, hits the money.
I might have to do 8.5 as well. Not to, you know... It deserves nines, but like if I'm comparing it to what I was saying, like one of my favorite movies being 12 Angry Men, I still probably enjoy 12 Angry Men more.
Yeah.
Like if you were to put both of them in front of me, while I do say that technically, Wizard of Oz is a better movie technically.
Yeah,
a more ambitious movie.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Way more ambitious. I would enjoy 12 Angry Men a little bit more. So I'll give it an. I'll give it an 8.7.
8.7?
An 8.7. It's not one of those that I go seeking out to watch, but I do enjoy it when I watch it.
Okay, so my total score is 26 out of 30, and yours is a 26.1 out of 30.
Okay.
So it gets a 26.05 out of
30. Yeah, I mean, it's up there.
Yeah, so 14-point difference between the two movies.
Yeah. It would have been... That's why I said you couldn't have chose two completely different movies if you tried.
Yeah.
Even when it came to scary things, there's more scary things in Wizard of Oz than Human Monster.
Exactly, yeah. So Wizard of Oz, I feel like, was a good choice. But now the choice is yours for your double.
Yeah, I'm giving you a gift.
All right.
Let me bring it up. We're jumping up to the 70s.
You're going to the 70s. All right.
Finally, we're going to get some... We kind of dipped our toes into some color. So now we're going to go to 1978. 1978 was a big year.
Yeah.
I think Halloween came out that year, if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty sure, yeah.
But also, there was a movie that your boy Wes Craven put out.
Yeah.
Called Summer of Fear.
Summer of Fear? I haven't seen that one.
Starring Linda Blair.
Okay.
You know, little gift to you. We went to the Philippines with your international choice last time. So I thought when I was looking up to see what movies came out, I was like, oh, you know what? He likes Wes Craven. How about we do a Wes Craven movie?
Okay.
Never seen it myself.
All right.
And I figured that this would give us something to talk about, our non-horror movie that we're going to be doing for the double feature. Since we do live in an era of just movies that are bombarded with Marvel in DC, I thought that we would take a look at one of the very first ones, one I haven't seen, but old Christopher Reeve's Superman.
All right. I haven't seen that either.
I haven't seen it, but I know he is considered like one of the best adaptations of Superman.
Yeah. I want to say the first Superman adaptation I've seen was Brandon Ross.
Mine, are we talking live action?
Yeah.
You know, the first live action one I probably saw was the one in Superman Returns. I think that was I think that was a 2000. Superman, 2006.
That's the one with Brandon Routh.
Oh, then yes. That was the first one I saw as well. Then, of course, you had Henry Cavill later on down the line. But we're going to get...
Hulchins probably is the one who did the best with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even get a movie. He just had a show.
But I figured since we're bombarded with, you know, Marvel and DC, and there's a new Superman coming out not by James Gunn, I figure we'll pay some respects to the OG.
All right. Yeah. I'm excited about that.
That's going to be a cool double feature. Superman and a Wes Craven movie.
Summer of Fear. All right. All right. Just want to thank you guys for listening and hope you guys all have a great week.
Love you.
Peace.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.